Welcome to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11 a.m. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Today, we will be reading from the latest edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. This is Joanne with Mary reading to you live from Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. We have a PSA to tell you about today. The Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. Created by Tactile Images, the exhibit uses patented technology that transforms iconic works of art into three-dimensional tactile renderings, allowing visitors to experience visual information through touch. The exhibit's design, in part, makes visual art more accessible to the blind or visually impaired. The exhibit, Seven Art Movements, examines the evolution of the history's art movement through tactile reproductions of works by renowned artists, including Leonardo da Vinci, Johannes Vermeer, and Vincent van Gogh. It also explores stylistic characteristics of the Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassicism, Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Art Nouveau, and Expressionism. The exhibit features seven tactile images, each paired with a corresponding fine art print. The Worcester Talking Book Library is committed to ensuring that everyone has access to educational and cultural experiences, said Lee Ann Hooley, head of WTBL. This exhibit offers a unique opportunity for individuals who are blind or visually impaired to engage with art in a meaningful way while helping sighted visitors gain a deeper appreciation for accessible design and inclusive programming. Once again, the Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. And now I will hand it over to Mary.
Good morning. The first article I have is After Anna Maria and Becker Closures, Colleges Embrace New Strategies Amid Intensifying Headwinds. Back in the 1980s, a large billboard stood sentinel over the eastbound lanes of I-290, trumpeting Worcester as an oasis of higher education and listing the city's 10 colleges, infamously including one in Paxton, and by 1989, the shuttered Central New England College. That Paxton school, Anna Maria College, buckled under financial strain and ceased operations in May, following the footsteps of Becker College, which closed in 2021 as COVID-19's impacts exacerbated an already tenuous fiscal position. Today, Central Massachusetts remains home to 15 colleges and universities, including 8 in the city, as they grapple with a raft of essential challenges of rising costs and expenses, public policy, waning consumer confidence, and a dwindling pool of potential students. To avoid becoming the next Anna Maria or Becker, these remaining schools are aggressively pursuing multifaceted strategies to keep the lights on and are even seeing enrollment trends rebound from pandemic-induced decline. Our institutional priorities are to strengthen our financial position through enrollment and endowment growth, including an upcoming capital campaign, said William Pazinski, president of Nichols College in Dudley. And to reaffirm the commitments that make us uniquely Nichols, a small, close-knit community that's creative, collaborative, and singularly focused on student success. Up to 442 of the 1,700 private, nonprofit degree-granting institutions in the U.S. will arrive at the cusp of financial exigency within the next decade, according to a report from Huron, a Chicago-based global consulting firm with an office in Boston. Endowments and enrollments are critical guideposts to determining colleges' vulnerability. Those with fewer than 1,000 students and less than $100 million in endowment are most at risk, said Peter Stokes, Huron's Managing Director of Strategy and Operations. No private college in central Massachusetts falls under these thresholds, although three are close. Nichols has 1,300 students and a growing endowment of about $39 million as of June. Dean College in Franklin has 1,001 students and a $64 million endowment. Assumption University expects more than 2,100 students this fall and has a $107 million endowment. Every other private institution in central Massachusetts has an endowment exceeding $500 million. What is important is that colleges and universities understand their options and make informed choices, Stokes said. Like Nichols, Assumption is leaning into the characteristics that set it apart. Small colleges are vulnerable if they commoditize, seeking to become all things to all people, said Bill Boffey, Assumption Vice President of Enrollment and Management. Assumption's strategic plan resists commoditization by strengthening our commitment to Catholic liberal arts education. We choose growth by distinction. Instituted in 2024, Assumption's 10-year strategic plan, Thrive, focuses on enrollment growth. By 2028, the university aims to have 2,135 undergraduate and 500 graduate students, a 30% increase over 2024. The school is on track to achieve its goals, Boffey said. While some liberal arts colleges are faced with closure or contraction, Assumption is growing, he said. Thrive reaffirms our confidence in each other and in the kind of education Assumption provides. Assumption enrolled 524 freshmen in fall 2025, according to the school. The largest influx of first-year students on the Salisbury Street campus since 2016, a 42% increase in new student enrollment over the last 3 years. Assumption and Nichols are expanding offerings, each agreeing to absorb programs and students from Anna Maria, including Northeast's largest fire science bachelor's program, which is going to Nichols, and a nursing program. Assumption expects at least 75 students. Nichols, which has 76 deposits from Anna Maria transfer students and expects more, plans to launch its own fire science and emergency management program as early as fall 2027. The students enrolled in these programs deserve to complete their degrees, and we will help them do so, Pazinski said. Nichols' donors are responding well to the college's future plans, as giving is up 33% this year, said Pazinski. That's the kind of positive momentum we need as we plan for a comprehensive capital campaign. Donors want to invest in institutions with a clear vision and a credible plan. While thoughtful planning and bold strategy can allow forward-thinking institutions to be optimistic about their futures, more challenges are coming. Fewer people will apply to college in the coming years, and fewer believe higher ed is a good investment. About 710,000 fewer children were born in America last year than at the nation's peak in 2007, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Combined with the plunging immigrant population, a January report from the Congressional Budget Office reduced its previous 2055 U.S. population projection by about 8 million people. The U.S. population aged 34 or younger is projected to decline in each of the next 30 years, CBO said. In September, 35% of Americans considered a college education to be very important, which is down from nearly 75% in 2010, according to the polling organization Gallup. In Massachusetts, the trends appear no more encouraging. A statewide survey of 1,069 parents of K through 12 students conducted in April by the nonpartisan Mass Inc. polling group found that 45% of middle school parents expect their child to pursue a bachelor's degree, down from 53% in 2023. As affordability consistently ranks as the top concern for college skeptics, the region's public universities and community colleges, buoyed by free tuition funded by the state's Fair Share Amendment, would seem to represent a reasonable alternative. Yet these institutions face challenges as well. Overall access has improved, but equity in outcomes and completion hasn't kept pace. In lower resource sectors like community colleges and some state universities are being asked to close bigger gaps with fewer resources than well-endowed institutions, said Jenny Williamson, the state director for the equity-focused nonprofit Ed Trust Massachusetts. The six-year graduation rate for Black and Latino students at state universities sit at 56%, compared to about 72% for white students. At community colleges, those rates are 35% overall, but 29% for Black students and 27% for Latino students, EdTrust says. The bottom line is, Massachusetts has built the funding and infrastructure to genuinely improve access to and outcomes in higher education through Fair Share and recent investments, Williamson said. The next phase is making sure higher education is genuinely easier to access and navigate for students at all our public institutions, not just some. Next, MAFRE expands New England presence with the purchase of Boston-based firm for $1.5 billion. MAFRE USA is acquiring Boston-based Safety Insurance Group for $1.54 billion in an all-cash transaction, a move MAFRE says will create one of the largest auto insurers in New England. The purchase will see Safety operating as a wholly owned subsidiary of MAFRE USA following closure. MAFRE USA is the Webster-based subsidiary of MAFRE SA, which is headquartered in Spain. The deal will create New England's second largest writer of private passenger auto insurance and the region's largest homeowner and commercial auto insurer, MAFRE announced on Thursday. The acquisition aligns with the company's goal of strengthening its presence in markets where it already operates, said Antonio Hernandez, Group Executive Chairman of MAFRE. Citibank and Deutsche Bank are providing a bridge loan to MAFRE to fund the acquisition. That bridge loan is intended to be replaced with a combination of larger-term securities and debt after the deal closes. The acquisition is expected to increase MAFRE's net income by more than 5% within 3 years. The acquisition has already been approved by the board of directors for both firms and is expected to close in the first quarter of 2027. The deal does still require approval from safety stockholders and regulators. And now it's time for our first break.
Do you need to contact the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office? The Attorney General's Office deals with a wide range of issues, including elder services, civil rights, fair labor, health care, insurance and financial services, housing, open meeting laws, public charities, and victim compensation. If you aren't sure who to call, an information specialist can direct you if you call the main switchboard. The main switchboard is 617-727-2200. Once again, that's 617-727-2200.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11:15. New Academy taps into growing business of elite youth sports. Drawing on their experiences playing minor league hockey, Chris and Peter Masters have spent the past three decades turning Boston Junior Bruins into one of the most prominent youth programs in New England. But when attempting to convince parents to enroll their young athletes with the Junior Bruins, the two brothers kept encountering the same problem. Chris Masters, MAI co-founder, we'd win a lot of those conversations, but we'd lose some of those as well. And when we lost, it was never about hockey, said Chris Masters. It was always family prioritizing academics. Realizing parents wanted a balance between athletics and academics, they spent the last decade developing an elite sports academy. Now, Masters Academy International is set to welcome its first students in September, operating on an 82-acre campus in Stowe, formerly used by Framingham-based Bose. The $83.8 million academy reflects the rapidly expanding business of elite youth sports, combining college preparatory academics with intensive athletic training in hopes of attracting families willing to invest in both. The academy will offer 9 sports: baseball, basketball, esports, fencing, figure skating, golf, hockey, lacrosse, and soccer, with students dedicating roughly 5 hours each day to academics and 4 hours to sport-specific training. The site will serve as a national performance center for U.S. fencing. Peter Masters, MAI co-founder, annual tuitions run $55,500 for middle school students, $65,500 for upper school day students, and $79,500 for boarding students in grades 9 through 12 with some financial aid available. Opening with about 300 students in the first year, MAI has set the ambitious goal of becoming the New England version of IMG Academy, a Florida school that has sent a number of athletes to the professional ranks. For Victor Mathisons, a professor of economics at the College of Holy Cross in Worcester, specializing in sports, the rise of an academy like MAI reflects the continued professionalization of youth sports. We have certainly seen gigantic professionalization of youth sports over the last several decades, and a real move away from rec sports to organized youth sports clubs and travel academies, he said. Site selection. The Masters brothers considered different sites, including a long vacant parcel adjacent to Marlborough's New England Sports Center, before deciding on the former Bose campus. As we kind of drove down off the main road to the property, it just felt to us like a traditional New England prep school, Chris Masters said. It was kind of isolated, kind of set back off the road in private, and had a lot of room for us to grow and build out fields and potentially rinks in the future. We just felt it was kind of perfect. The campus already had much of the needed infrastructure, including a cafeteria, commercial kitchen, and 3 floors of office space. If we didn't have the infrastructure in place and just the great bones of the building, we could obviously never open if we had to build that from scratch in 12 months, he said. Expected to create at least 190 jobs, the project received a $2.85 million tax credit from the state with debt financing provided by Needham Bank. Cognita Schools, a global private schools group based in London, is serving as a founding partner of MAI, providing equity funding and educational frameworks. Fluid Intelligence. Andy Williams, MAI's head of school, brings more than 35 years of experience in public and private education across the U.S., England, and Brazil. He says the school's academic philosophy starts with a question most institutions never ask. Rather than ask what subjects we teach, we ask who we want students to become by the time they graduate, Williams says. From there, with that graduate profile, we work backward, developing not only strong academic knowledge, but the skills students will need long after they've forgotten individual lessons. That means an emphasis on critical thinking, collaboration, and what Williams calls fluid intelligence, which he describes as the ability to perform when the answer isn't obvious. The school schedule includes daily academic studios, structured time for reflection and teacher support, and a flexible Friday for community and long-term project work. The burden of establishing the right culture falls on the adults, he said. Culture and community starts on day one, Williams says. As for whether competitive athletes will take academics seriously enough, Williams said early signals from students and families are encouraging. We haven't had somebody who's come in and said, "I'm not worried about the academics. I just want to know what the coaching is," he said. Families are very invested and interested in what our academic program is. NIL redshirting. MAI is focused on middle and high school age students. Masters has designed a program for middle and schoolers that still allow them to explore multiple disciplines, noting the increasing focus on the potential negative impact of young athletes specializing in only one sport. At the middle school level, we're what we're calling club-friendly, Master said. We set up our schedule so the middle school students can play multiple sports and then go back and play for their club teams. The school's launch comes at a moment of significant upheaval in the rules governing college athletics. Matheson said the emergence of name, image, and likeness, NIL deals, while a long overdue correction to a system where college athletes receive no compensation has a narrower impact than headlines suggest. All of the NIL money is all going to go to basically men's basketball players, a little bit of women's basketball players, and then the overwhelming majority is going to the men's football players, he said. Chris Masters echoed measured view, acknowledging that NIL is part of the conversation MAI expects to have with its students, but with the appropriate context. He said the school wants to make sure athletes understand a $20,000 NIL deal at one college shouldn't drive a 4-year enrollment decision. Let's not make a 4-year decision against a 40-year decision, he said. In the next article, automated record sealing pitched as a response to state's labor shortage. As the state stares down an immigration-influenced labor shortage, senators move to automate the process of sealing criminal records as a way to provide meaningful help to a labor market that badly needs workers, Senator Cindy Freeman said. A redrafted Freeman Amendment, number 511, adopted by the Senate, to its sweeping economic development borrowing bill, S-3178, would turn an underused legal right into real relief to hundreds of thousands of residents, the Arlington Democrat said on the floor. Our labor shortage is compounding just as the state's immigrant workforce, long a critical part of a labor and construction and direct care, faces new pressure, Freeman said. Nursing homes in particular are expected to lose at least 2,000 workers due to the end of the Temporary Protected Status, TPS, for Haitian immigrants, she noted. On top of that, the state is falling far short of the immigrant population growth researchers say is needed to stabilize construction and other labor-dependent industries. Following a June U.S. Supreme Court decision about 350,000 TPS recipients across the U.S. from Haiti and other countries are slated to lose their work permits on Monday. There are approximately 45,000 Haitian TPS holders in Massachusetts, Governor Maury Haley wrote to the U.S. Senate, urging it to pass legislation extending TPS. Across industries from healthcare and long-term care to transportation, hospitality, and construction, these workers help keep our economy running, Haley wrote. The sudden loss of their legal status and work authorization would be devastating for our state. Roughly 672,000 Massachusetts residents are eligible to have their criminal records sealed, Freeman said, but only about 10% have actually done so, and as a result, many are locked out of jobs the state needs filled. Many people don't seal their records because it's done manually in Massachusetts, Freeman explained, so they have to fill out a paper petition and mail it to the Commissioner of Probation, where it has to be processed individually. Those who face the largest barriers to manual sealing are those who are least likely to have the time, resources, or support to navigate a cumbersome sealing process, Senator Adam Gomez said. Under existing law, Massachusetts residents can file a petition to seal a criminal record 3 years after being found guilty of a misdemeanor or 7 years after a felony, without any new convictions, according to the Clean Slate Massachusetts Advocacy Coalition. The group launched the campaign in January 2025 to promote criminal record sealing reform legislation that had failed to clear the Judiciary Committee for years. According to the amendment, the Commissioner of Probation shall seal records subject to automatic sealing within 30 days of the time that the records become eligible for sealing. National advocacy group Clean Slate Initiative says 14 states have passed automated record sealing laws across the country, with Missouri being the most recent. We do not have the number of staff we need within the courts to actually process these in an efficient way. People already must wait years before they can seal their records, Freeman said, calling the system burdensome, slow, and inefficient. The main opposition to the policy change over the years came from the trial courts, just in terms of whether they're able to automate it, Freeman said, along with giving the trial court some funding for record sealing in a past budget. We found a nonprofit company that helps do this kind of coding for states, she added. The technology is getting better, and they're redoing their whole court system record stuff. So I think it's something that they now see. Oh, okay, we have a pathway to automate this stuff, Freeman said. Her amendment doesn't exactly mirror a bill S-1114 she filed this session on the topic, but she said it includes a major basic fundamental pieces. Massachusetts Competitive Partnership CEO Jay Ash backed the concept last year during a briefing, which created Boston Legal Services said at the time would mark the most significant criminal offender record information change since 2018 Criminal Justice Reform Act. Sealing records is access to employment. It is the single strongest predictor of a successful reentry and economic stability. And now it's time for another break.
Would you like to hear news from Charlton, Southbridge, and Sturbridge that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 5 p.m.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It's Wednesday, July 29th, and it is 11:30. National Grid's $474 million project leads push to power the economy of the future. Along the left fringe of the 13th hole fairway at Gardner Golf Course, 100-foot pines loom over the National Grid work site, where the origins of the central Massachusetts aging power infrastructure collide with the latest tangible steps towards its future. The work underway in Gardner is part of a sweeping effort to modernize New England's electric grid, replacing century-old infrastructure to meet surging demand from electric vehicles, heat pumps, advanced manufacturing, and other industries. Utilities and regulators say these investments are critical not only to keeping the lights on, but to supporting Massachusetts' economic growth and clean energy ambitions for decades to come. Infrastructure is really fundamental to economic growth, said Christopher Gehorn, Executive Vice President of Communications for the trade group Associated Industries of Massachusetts, known as AIM. The region will not be able to grow. Companies will not be able to expand if they don't have a reliable electrical system, particularly now that when the state is moving toward electric transportation, new construction being electrified, so that in itself makes it worth the investment. Days after the State Energy Facility Siting Board approved National Grid's $474 million A1-B2 transmission line project on June 4th, tree clearing and other site preparation began near Gardner's Crystal Lake, around New England's oldest transmission lines, originally erected in 1909. The project, which includes small portions of New Hampshire and Vermont, was approved by ratepayer funding by ISO New England and will cost Massachusetts customers $414 million. Modernizing this infrastructure will strengthen day-to-day reliability, support economic activity, and ensure the system has the capacity and flexibility to meet growing energy needs, said Lisa Wayland, New England president for National Grid. With more than 2,500 miles of transmission lines, 18,500 miles of smaller distribution lines, and 264 substations to maintain, and guided by decarbonization goals laid out in the Massachusetts Clean Energy and Climate, or CECP, plan for 2050, National Grid has developed a robust array of plans to replenish the system and expects those combined initiatives to meet future demand and feed the economy. Over a 10-year period through 2034, the utility expects to generate more than $3.5 billion of economic activity through its grid modernization efforts, including the creation of 28,000 full and part-time jobs, according to its 2024 Future Grid Plan. AIM really strongly supports the all-of-the-above approach to energy, but renewable energy does not have potential to create an entirely new industry here in Massachusetts, Gehorn said. So investments like this are certainly welcome news for the employer community. ISO New England, the nonprofit authorized by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to oversee the region's grid operation, projects annual electricity consumption to increase by 9% through 2035. The independent system operator predicts peak demand to rise significantly, particularly in winter, due to the electrification of the heating industry. The widening adoption of electric heat pumps and electric transportation are central to the state's 2050 CECP goals, which include 93% of medium and heavy-duty vehicles being electrified or non-emitting, 87% of commercial space heated by electricity or alternative fuels, and 52% of industrial energy use electrified, all of which add up to more strain to the grid. And it doesn't end there. We are seeing a broader set of trends driving demand on the grid, including growth in sectors like advanced manufacturing, life sciences, and logistics, said Kate Davenport, National Grid Director of Network Planning and Strategy. While the proliferation of expansive, energy-sucking data centers continues to make headlines, their impact in Massachusetts has been minimal and is expected to remain that way. In New England, we have not seen the same scale of proposed data center or large load development that has emerged in other regions of the country, said Mary Kate Colapietro, a spokesman for ISO New England. In the 2024 Future Grid Plan, National Grid compared future demand needs with existing system capacity. It determined that without any system upgrades, by 2035, every subregion in the system will see demand that exceed capacity, which makes stabilizing the region's transmission infrastructure all the more critical. Our overall strategy is intended to support emissions reductions while enabling efficient investment, optimizing the use of our infrastructure, and then our core goal of maintaining safe and reliable service for our customers, Davenport said. Planning for the A1-B2 project actually began in 2019. Expected to be completed by early 2028, the current phase of work will replace the double circuit transmission lines, tap lines, wooden poles, and other supporting structures connecting high voltage wires to Gardner's Crystal Lake Taps substation, which distributes electricity to local homes and businesses. Optical ground wire will be added to the line as well, improving communication capabilities and opening the door for increased automation. In all, the seven phases of the project, comprising more than 570 structures and spanning 47 miles across Warwick, Royalston, Athol, Winchington, Gardner, Westminster, Fitchburg, Leominster, and Stirling, are expected to be finished by December 2030, after work on Athol's Chestnut Hill taps is complete. The next oldest transmission line on the grid, E5-F6, was built in 1913. It originates just west of the Quabbin Reservoir, runs through the Brookfields, and ends in Millbury. National Grid is evaluating investment on this line, Davenport said. ISO New England is developing new framework for prioritizing projects using input from policymakers and stakeholders. The Asset Condition Reviewer would be a first-in-the-nation role among grid administrators, providing an independent technical review of projects proposed by transmission owners. Upgrading transmission lines with additional capacity, when it makes sense, can better prepare our grid for future demand, reliability, and the growth of renewable energy, said Nick Krakoff, director of Clean Grid for Boston nonprofit Conservation Law Foundation, which advocates for solutions to environmental challenges. Next, Wavelength Coffee launches hospitality division targeting restaurants and hotels. Shirley-based Wavelength Coffee Roasters has launched a new hospitality division aimed at supplying sustainably produced coffee to restaurants, cafes, and hotels. The new business unit will provide wholesale coffee along with product selection and tasting consultations for hospitality operators seeking premium coffee offerings, the company announced on Friday. The division expands Wavelength's business beyond its direct-to-consumer and retail channels as the company looks to capitalize on the growing demand for sustainably sourced food and beverage products. Hospitality businesses understand that details matter, Wavelength co-founder Jim Varney said in the announcement. Our guests are increasingly conscious of where their coffee comes from and how it's made. Founded in 2025 by Jim and Deanna Varney, Wavelength sources coffee from growers using sustainable farming practices and roast its beans using all-electric, solar-powered air roasting technology. The company packages its coffee in recyclable steel containers. The launch follows the expansion of Wavelength's partnership with Revival Cafe, which extended its agreement to serve Wavelength coffee at all six of its locations in Boston, Cambridge, Somerville, Lexington, Alston, and Watertown. Next, Boston Scientific plans $800 million restructuring, including $300 million in layoff costs. Marlboro-based Boston Scientific Corporation is launching a three-year, $800 million restructuring plan that will include layoffs, the company said Monday. The company's board of directors, on July 21st, approved the implementation of a global restructuring plan aiming to increase efficiency through supply chain optimization and changes to in its organizational structure. The restructuring will begin this year and is expected to be completed in 2029. The company is expecting up to $350 million in costs relating to transferring product manufacturing lines between facilities, up to $300 million in costs relating to employee terminations, and up to $150 million in additional costs relating to the restructuring, according to a Monday filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The company will determine later how exactly employees will be impacted, and it will work with unions when required, it said in the filing. Boston Scientific expects new jobs to be created in growth areas, even as J.P. Morgan analyst Robbie Marcus said the restructuring was not surprising, noting slowdowns in the company's electrophysiology and Watchman heart implant business. And Stifel analyst Rick Wise said the plan may help Boston Scientific integrate recent additions and acquisitions, according to MedTech Dive. Boston Scientific purchased a 34% ownership stake in Georgia-based heart valve firm Myris in May. This came after the firm completed its acquisition of California-based manufacturer Valencia Technologies in April and a planned purchase of California-based Penumbra for $14.5 billion in January. The company's stock price rose 1.2% on the New York Stock Exchange following the news of the restructuring, sitting at $46.06 per share at market close. And now it's time for our final break.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11:45 a.m. The key to North Central downtown revitalization, small businesses. 6 years ago, finding a tenant for a commercial space in downtown Fitchburg could take the better part of a year. Today, Tracy Sladen can barely keep pace with demand. I remember the first spot I had in Fitchburg about 6 years ago. It was on the market for 8 or 9 months before I really got any interest in it. Now, everything moves so quickly, you really can't keep up with it, said Sladen, a commercial real estate agent with LAER Realty Partners, Lancaster's office, who works with the Fitchburg and Gardner redevelopment authorities. What Sladen is seeing on Main Street reflects a broader shift underway in North Central Massachusetts, as communities like Fitchburg and Athol work to revitalize their downtowns, small businesses have become a key driver of economic development. With new housing and public investment reshaping downtowns, entrepreneurs are attracted by lower rents and growing activity, while local leaders see them as essential to filling storefronts, generating foot traffic, and creating amenities. Everybody just really wants these entrepreneurs to be successful and for North Central to grow and thrive, said Sarah Tavitian, small business senior manager for New View Communities, the Fitchburg-based community development corporation. Gaming and Cake. A new addition to Fitchburg's downtown business scene is Multiplayer Gaming Center and Lounge, co-owned by Marquis Harding and Skylar Frink. The business offers console and PC games for casual gaming or esports competitions. The pair spent roughly 3 years getting the concept off the ground before a July grand opening at 10 Main Street. The mixed-use development added 44 apartments in 2023, bringing residents within walking distance of businesses. Multiplayer shares the first floor with Shining Stars Dance Center, another new business. The downtown location was an obvious fit, Frank said. The area is walkable, transit accessible, and affordable in a way that a comparable space in Boston or Worcester would not be. Anywhere else, you couldn't have this size of space, Frank said. You would really have to pack things in. The business is already drawing a diverse crowd. Harding, who is black and queer, said creating an inclusive, welcoming space was a central goal from the beginning. Customers have been thanking him for creating an accepting environment. Personally and professionally, that just makes me feel so happy because one of my big goals and why I even came into this was to create a black, queer, affirming space, Harding said. Not far away from Multiplayer, Mirari Diaz's journey to her own storefront began in a stall at the Fitchburg Public Market. Diaz, a native of Puerto Rico who moved to Fitchburg in 2020 and began baking out of her home the following year, spent time building her business from a stall at the market before making the leap to open a Mirror's Cakes standalone downtown location at 150 Main Street. Speaking through an interpreter, Diaz said the public market served as a way to test the waters and see if she was going to be able to manage her own business, giving her the confidence to open her own storefront. Both businesses credit New View Communities with helping them navigate the path to opening. New View provides free one-on-one technical assistance to entrepreneurs, guiding them through writing a business plan, securing financing, and filing paperwork with City Hall. Replicating Fitchburg's efforts in Athol, Fitchburg's downtown revival is not happening by accident, and Tavitian believes it can be replicated. We're really confident that we can recreate the same revitalization in Athol, she said. The secret sauce in Fitchburg is a collaboration between organizations like New View, the City of Fitchburg, the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce, and Fitchburg State University, said Tavitian. The goal is to build that same web of support in Athol, a smaller community with its own challenges, including layoffs tied to the public equity takeover of longtime Athol II manufacturer L.S. Starrett Co., said Michael Lindquist, executive director of Polis Center for Social and Economic Development in Athol. New View's vehicle for revitalization in Athol is a program called Remaking Main Street, a collaboration with Athol Credit Union and Polis. The cornerstone of the effort is a 7-week small business development class, at the end of which participants present their completed business plans at a small business showcase, said Samantha Beauvais, HR and marketing coordinator at Athol Credit Union. People will come out with a business plan, and then this business plan will be presented at our small business showcase in November, she said. Local judges will pick out the best presentation, and they'll win some capital to help get their business going. Lundquist said Polis plans to apply lessons from its international community development work in Athol. The biggest detriment to enhancing local development is lack of imagination, Lundquist said. Everyone says, well, there's not enough money for this, not enough money for that. They haven't used their creative thinking to really think about what makes sense here. The coalition has raised $15,000 from private sector partners for the Showcase Prize Fund. I grew up here in Athol, Lundquist said. Thursdays and Friday nights, you can barely walk down the street. There were so many people, and it was a very vibrant community. We have that as a historical perspective that we can strive for. Next, SurTax supporters say Hall shows wealthy are staying in Massachusetts. Revenue generated from the state SurTax on wealthier households was up more than 13% last budget year, totaling more than $3.38 billion, the Massachusetts Department of Revenue reported this week. The Raise Up Massachusetts Coalition that led the 2022 push to adopt the 4% surtax on household income above about $1.1 million said fiscal year 2026 was the third year in a row that the surtax generated more than twice DOR's original estimate of $1.2 billion in annual revenue. DOR said that it took in precisely $3 billion from the surtax between July 1, 2025 and June 30, 2026. The year prior, DOR said it collected $2.9 billion from the surtax. Nearly 4 years after the voters passed the Fair Share Amendment, it's still surpassing expectations. The skeptics who said multimillionaires would flee from our states rather than pay their fair share are being proved wrong. The ultra-rich are clearly staying in Massachusetts and paying more in taxes, leading to the taxes' massive overperformance relative to initial projections, RaiseUp said in a statement. The revenue generated by the surtax is only supposed to be used for education and transportation initiatives, and RaiseUp specifically highlighted universal free school meals, free community college, and free regional transit buses as ways the surtax is making a difference. Last week, Governor Maureen Healey proposed using $100 million in projected and unbudgeted surtax revenue to give public schools an additional $112 in aid per student on average. For a third time, lawmakers appear poised to have a sizable amount of surtax revenue that will be available for them to dole out in mid-year budget. The last 2 years, lawmakers have divvied up the surtax excess in springtime supplemental spending plans. The fiscal year 2026 budget originally expected to use $2.4 billion in surtax revenue compared to $3.38 billion collected. Colin Young is the deputy editor for State House News Service and State Affairs Pro Massachusetts, and he wrote that article. Movers and shakers in July 2027. Giselle Rivera Flores has joined Worcester Community Action Council as a chief external affairs officer. Rivera Flores brings more than 15 years of communication experience to the newly created role. She most recently served as communications director for Massachusetts Senator Robert Kennedy D. Worcester and holds a master's degree in organizational psychology. And that is all the time we have for today. You have been listening to the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. This is Joanne reading with Mary. Thank you for listening. The Worcester Telegram and Gazette will be aired at noon and again at 7 p.m.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you or a loved one losing your vision? Mass Commission for the Blind can help. Reclaim your independence with new skills and assistive technologies. Partner with Mass Commission for the Blind to develop your vision for the future. If you're blind or visually impaired, find out if you're eligible to register for services to help you achieve your career and life goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.